Always one of my favorite guests. I usually see him in the Apple store, but this time it didn't come about that way. Capital Region resident Patrick Harbron began his career photographing the luminaries of rock and roll. Rock and Roll Icons Photographs by Patrick Harbron is an exhibition at the Albany Institute of History and Art, taken from his body of concert and portrait photography of influential musicians and groups of the 1970s and 80s, captured at pivotal moments in their careers. The exhibition features many photographs that have never been published or exhibited. Harbron photographed artists such as Blondie, Rush, Stevie Ray Vaughan, The Police, Bruce Springsteen, Madonna, and Elvis Costello early in their careers. He followed these artists to prominence and others that were already well-known, including the Rolling Stones, Pink Floyd, Led Zeppelin, Van Halen, Eric Clapton, David Bowie, Queen, The Who, Genesis, Kiss, U2, Aerosmith, and Prince. I read that list because it's really, really impressive. The exhibition will include Harbron's collection of posters and ephemera gathered throughout his career, along with guitars borrowed from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. The exhibit runs November 5th through February 12th. And in the midst of hanging the show and putting all of those rock stars where they need to be, Patrick made his way down the avenue and joins us this morning. Thank you very much for being here.
Well, thanks for having me, Joe. I'm really glad to be back.
A delight to have you on the program. So, how did this come to be? Who called who?
Well, in fact, I was in this studio doing an interview about the Springsteen group show. I was in The River in January, and they called me following that, having heard the interview, and said, we would like you to do a show here in November. And it's a substantial exhibit. And, of course, I agreed, and I've been working on it since then, since February. So it's been quite a long journey, as they say.
What is it like to go through your career, your photographic life,
right,
and to take those moments and figure out how you're going to tell that story? Because you're basically curating yourself.
It's true. And, in fact, I'm looking to the past while moving forward at the same time, meaning that this stuff today is still vital. People want to know about all of those artists. That kind of music really hasn't gone away and has found a whole new audience. And when I think that many of them were photographed 35 years ago, like Bruce on the River Tour or Blondie or any of them, and even a little bit longer, going to the mid-70s, one might wonder what the value of mining the past is. But because of the interest in it, it simply hasn't gone away. It makes it really worthwhile. And also, when I photographed all of these artists, I had a feeling about many of them, not prescient, but knowing that what I was shooting all by itself became history. And that history has survived to this day. The interest is there.
When it comes to moving forward, what can a photograph tell us? What can that image, and obviously it depends on the image and
sure,
it depends on the artist and so forth, but in general, what can that image tell us about that time, that place, that artist, their music, their place in musical history, ...
Aside from that caption, it tells you is based on two things. One, how the artist was presenting themselves at any time they're performing or in front of the camera. And secondly, how the photographer makes that photograph happen. You could put three people in front of the same scenario and come back with three different things, and none of them may work, and one of them may be brilliant. So it's really up to the photographer to capture what is presented properly. In the case of performance, which I did a lot of stage work, and a lot of that is, of course, shown in the show, that was really reportage. So my goal and my assignment every time was to capture the essence of that artist as they were presenting themselves. So it's really a two-pronged effort.
Who hired you in most of those cases?
I was hired by record companies, by the bands, by magazines, newspapers. It was a lot of print work, not as much as today. You know, the print work is gone.
So is there a difference in the sense of the band obviously wants you to make them look as good as possible?
Right.
Whereas if you're working for a magazine, the job is to report on that event, works
correct,
and all. So talk a little bit about that, and do we see examples of that within the
well,
show?
Well, the groups are very conscious of what they look like, and as I recall, and can hardly forget it, the idea of being limited to only three songs and being put in specific places in the arenas and the clubs, that started to happen a long time ago because they were very conscious of what they looked like. They didn't necessarily want a photographer, even when I was working for the band, to be in front, you know, taking photos for such a long period of time. So when I worked for a band, yes, they would be conscious and they would pick the picture. When you worked for a publication, the group didn't have the opportunity to pick the photograph that was going to be reproduced, which to this day is an issue. Beyonce recently forbid news photographers across the board from even photographing her show because she didn't like how she looked. So sometimes it's a very conscious effort, and sometimes the group's just happy to have you there. Groups like Kiss, I would shoot them for half an hour or longer at a time because they knew the power of the visual. Mm. They understood that they were a group that had to be seen. You were more aware of what they looked like than what the title of a song was. And the plan was, as long as you were in their head, that was the goal. And
there's a big difference of so let's talk about goal, because what was the goal? For those of us who happened to be in that arena or in that club and maybe were in Section X, mm-hmm. quite a ways away, we have a much different perspective than obviously oh, yeah. you who are so close to the stage. So when we see that photograph,
right.
we see something that we did not see that puts into a context if we happen to be there.
Well, it brings the group much closer to you. And that's why this show is exciting, if I may say so, because not only from the performance, but in a portrait point of view where I have a personal insight into that artist that they let me have, that I perhaps created by lighting or just making them look a certain way. So you're seeing that artist in a way that the general public would never see unless on an album cover or if they were sitting in the front row. That made it sort of exclusive. And so a magazine or a group knew that the photographer would be able to bring that out, because not everybody gets to sit in a row or be able to meet these artists in the way that I did.
As you're putting the show together, and I want to get to the other elements, the ephemera, and
oh, please,
sort
yeah.
of all coming together. But before we do that, and talking about the actual artists, was it your desire for it to be a retrospective of your work, or were you looking at more of telling a story of the time and of those decades?
It's very much telling a story. It's my story. It's the story of all of these artists. I've been a rock and roll fan and a musician and a writer and a photographer for over 40 years. This is ingrained in me, so it's very much part of what I'm about. But in order to make it really interesting, I'm showing all of these people that we all know. Police and Stevie Ray Vaughan and Prince and Stevie Wonder and Van Halen. I mean, the list, you read it goes on and on. And all of these people had some real strong connection to people who listened to their music. So now these will all be connected, and the narrative is all of these groups through the 70s, 80s, and into the 90s even, as a collective. Putting them all together, there's 75 frame photographs, there's displays of things, but photographs that are just loose, and all of it tells a story of that time. Everyone who comes there who's a rock and roll fan will have some connection to it, a strong one. And if you're not a fan, you'll be taken by these people and their visual and what their story was. Each photograph I started writing captions, but in the end I wrote little stories about everything having to do with the history of the group and my interaction, or slight editorial. It's a celebration of the music, so, and of the musicians and performers. And each one of those little stories was really a chore, honestly, but a joy too. And it got I haven't written anything other than an invoice in 40 years, so to do it again is great.
Does it put it into in writing those captions, did you want it to also put the photo into context?
Oh,
to tell
absolutely.
Us where they were, at what point they were in their career. It was 2 weeks before this happened. It was 6 weeks after yep. that happened, ..
Well, the notes have references to the price of the ticket. There was a mention of an electronics store that had a Tijuana Brass poster in the window. There are all kinds of, and if you're of an age where you get it, then that will resonate with you. But the history is written down. So not only are you looking at groups who are, you know, have more scarves than a department store end of year sale, but you're also looking at hair and clothing and the music and the guitars, and people will have a sense of history that they're reminded of, or maybe will come to them for the first time across the board. There's almost 20 years of people from different cultural backgrounds, but all in this single note of rock and roll.
If a band had hired you, and you came to work for them, how many gigs would you typically do? Was it just one, or would it be over a series of a tour?
Well, that's the other thing, that mostly one or two gigs. I mean, I worked for Hall & Oates and Black Sabbath and Asia and Bruce Springsteen, and with a lot of those groups, I would spend several days, but sometimes I didn't. I mean, sometimes I would photograph a group once. Mm. You know, Black Sabbath, I did, was the live album, and I was one of the main contributors photographically, and I shot one show. But with Springsteen, I shot many shows. Hall & Oates, I shot many shows. So it really varied. But mostly I had to hit the runway running and make it happen in a short period of time with maybe just one or two engagements. It was pretty limited. So it made me sharp.
So let's use that sharpness and that example to further the question and say, okay, so you go to the show, you have that limited time.
Mm-hmm.
Roughly how many images would come out of that? Not final, but just what you have.
Well, what would I bring away? How many things would I shoot? Oh, I'd have two cameras going with different lenses when I was shooting a live situation, and I might come out of there with eight or nine rolls of film or two rolls of film. It really depended on my access. And of course, this wasn't digital. This was all film.
Right,
we're saying film.
So you 70s and 80s.
The only thing you see on the back of the cameras is the serial number. I mean, you're not seeing an image. And so you had to be really on top technically of your game. And I would have a sense of what I was getting when I got it. And that's before it got processed, hoping that things didn't go wrong there. So I didn't overshoot, but I also was limited to the amount of stuff that I could do and the position from where I was standing and all of that.
So who makes the decision then?
I did. That
this is the shot, this is the one.
I think because I made all the decisions up to everything having to do with making the photograph, I would edit the photos. And so when magazines would say, give me everything, they usually didn't. Rolling Stone would, but generally, then they want you to do an edit, because they want to see the final decision in the whole process of making the photo, whether I'm shooting them in a studio or whether I'm working in front of a stage. That was part of it. Make an edit. Make your choice. So that's what, you know, and it would work out really well that way.
Rock and Roll Icons, Photographs by Patrick Harbron, is an exhibition at the Albany Institute of History and Art. It runs through February 12th. It opens on November 5th. So, TikTok, you're busy working on the exhibit.
I am.
And we're thrilled that you're here with us this morning. So in that idea of taking the image and putting the show together, are there moments where you're like, all right, so do I consider Hall & Oates Icons, or?
As it turns out, Hall & Oates is not in the main. There's a whole screen with like 500 photographs that constantly spin and turn. It's really
okay.
It's really interesting. So the guys are there. Hi, Daryl. They're you know, but they're. So anyway, they're in the show. But there's people that I had people I pulled out at the last minute. The editing process, the idea of putting together that much work and deciding who would be part of this. Is Madonna a rock and roll icon, or is she, in the end, Madonna is in because of the influence that she had.
Well, the cultural
music.
Influences.
Well, huge. And yeah. so is Prince, and then so is Billy Joel, who, you know, so there's a real, and then there's AC/DC and Jimmy Page, no question are they part of rock and roll, or Eric Clapton. So the choice, I had so many pictures. There were some obvious ones right off the top. Yeah, the Bruce stuff and the Eric, no problem. Easy to decide. The Blondie, Bowie, definitely. And after that, blending and putting things together, I had trouble where to place the Neil Young photo yesterday, and there's no way I would do that without a Neil photo. But it was really the idea of placing, and then seeing when you see the gallery and you'll see the sections and you'll see that it's not just 2D, it's involved and through the curator, Diane Shuchuk and Thomas Nelson, who's been constructing the gallery, the work just sings. It's amazing. Just the presentation. So it gives it a whole new aspect. And it's, you can tell I'm pretty excited.
Is there music playing when you walk in?
Oh, yes. Yeah, we're going to have so I created a disc, which was really tough. Are you kidding me? I went through, you know, the 2 million, and I'm not exaggerating probably, all the tunes I have in my iPod. And I pulled, you know, and I made a disc. Well, discs only let you do 75 minutes. So to boil it down, and I said, okay, it'll just have to be the pictures of people here and key things. So there's Who and Bon Jovi and John Cougar, Mellencamp. There's tons of great stuff. And that will play the whole time you're in there. And this reel of photos will go, and you'll have different aspects of the time of rock and roll to look at the same time.
I'm endlessly fascinated by this. So if no one else is, I apologize. But I find this idea of selection to be fascinating. So The Who. Let's just take The Who, for example. You have all of these huge names within the Rolling Stones. You have all of these huge names within that. So do you take it as a group? Do you take it, oh, I'm just going to get Mick in this shot? How do you decide even on that?
Well, because the Rolling Stones, who I only photographed a few times, are the Glimmer Twins, Mick and Keith. You can't have one without the other.
Right.
So they are together. They sandwich a certain, their bookends on a certain portion of the exhibit. The Who is a group that, for me, when I was growing up, was the band. Keith Moon was my idol because I was a drummer. I loved the musicality of how he played. I loved The Who. And The Who has always been, very important to me as a musician and as a fan. So they have a section. And because The Who is really all about, they said, in my generation, I hope I die before I get old, which made them both successful and prophetic. So the band has a history that is part tragic and yet enduring. So I created a section around The Who that has key photographs of times in their career that I photographed them. And a lot of it had to do with how much material do I have on each of these groups to make it happen. Springsteen has a section. Kiss has a section. So there will be people say, where's REM? Well, we can't do everybody. but these are groups that are either influential to me or to the fans themselves. And again, the balance, the narrative, it's all keeping it in a fine-tuned, way.
I asked this question aside from the photography. And that is, if you talk to, and I use this term very loosely, and hopefully no one will take offense to it, but if you talk to the old-time political reporters, mm-hmm. they will tell you, if you talk to the George Wills and some are gone now, Jack Dermont and these other people, they'll tell you, well, when I was covering this presidential race, we had access.
Right.
We had access that we no longer have. You can go down to the Capitol across the street from the exhibit that you're mounting right now and ask those reporters who've been around a long time, and they'll tell you about the access that they used to have. I was thinking about this at the World Series last night, the access that the sports reporters used to have to the players that they no longer have. We hear about that, yes, in our politics. We hear about it even in our entertainment reporting of, oh, in the day we had access to those stars. Talk a little bit about your access. At the time that this show reflects, what was your access? And would you have even that amount of access today?
Not now. No, you would not today. And today it's been distilled down to a couple of agencies who then have the ability to distribute the photos widely. So the individual photographer today does not have the access or opportunities that I had and the people before me. My access, as I mentioned in the interview earlier, was starting to change in the 70s. Groups were reducing the amount of access groups would have. In the late 60s, when I was just a kid going to shows, and then later when I became a photographer, you could wander around anywhere. And that ended pretty quickly as groups understood the power of the image. This was before the internet and before iPhones and before YouTube and all of that. They still understood, I need to control how I look. I need to control how many images are out there and who they are. And that control got to be silly at some points and involved contracts that were, usury and it just made no sense. So the access did change. The access now is not what it was then at all.
I'm fascinated now when I go to shows that the rules are all over the place. Sometimes you can take cell phone pictures. Sometimes they tell you you can't. Sometimes you can take pictures with a lens. Sometimes you can't. Sometimes you're not even allowed to bring the device into an arena. It's all over the place. But so for us as people who are paying the ticket price, which, by the way, is really high.
Well, wait until you see the display. There's a whole display of old tickets and passes, and you'll see tickets for things that are 3 and 4 and 5. There was a big festival I went to with a whole bunch of bands, Ted Nugent, Aerosmith, and the Ramones. It was $12.50 for the whole day. I went to see David Gilmour at Radio City Music Hall, and I'm embarrassed to say publicly how much I paid for the ticket, which incidentally was worth it. But that really reduces, it's not gone up with the cost of living index. It's just gone up. It's incredible.
I had a situation. I was in Washington, and I had a situation where someone gave me a ticket to see Barbara Streisand. I wasn't going to go. She was staying actually at the hotel we were at, and so they handed me a ticket, and I was sitting there, and it was a very nice seat. It was lovely, and I looked down at the ticket, and $750.
Wow!
And you're like, whoa, really? and I thought, well, you know, thank God I didn't pay for it. But I mean, that is I was going to say it's obscene, but it is obscene,
it
isn't
is.
It?
It's and you know the recently there was the huge desert show with Bob Dylan, the
yes.
Who, Roger Waters, et cetera.
Old Cella.
It was $1,500 to go for the 2 days to get the VIP seat so you wouldn't get sunstroke and you get a better seat. But if you think about it, you look and now you're rationalizing. This is the sick part. You're rationalizing, saying, well, ticket for one of those gigs would be $350, and that would be $1,950. So I'll see the $1,500 for six bands deal. Well, deal. What are you? I mean, I'm sure there are people who didn't make $1,500 a year at one point who were looking at, you know,
yeah,
cost of a ticket like that's obscene.
But I was asking, and we just have a minute or two left. But I was asking you about the photographic element of that. How do you look at it as a professional photographer, and you look at the casual fan who's going to see their favorite band, and they have their phone, they have their camera. What do you make of that?
How do you mean? What do
I mean, some bands limit it. I mean, do you think they should be able to capture that moment?
Sure. I mean, it's a visual world we live in. I mean, phones take better photos than some cameras. I mean, it has changed. You have to morph. You have to move on. I get that groups want to control things like their music being taken that they've developed and paid for, a photograph of their image, their public performing. I think that's part of the price. Whether or not it's used illegally to endorse a product without their permission is another issue entirely that has to be watched closely. But otherwise, it's part of the enjoyment of going to a show. I think it's important.
The exhibit is Rock and Roll Icons, photographs by Patrick Harbin. And will this move, or are you going to?
That's the plan. We would like it to move. It's a show that's been tightly put together, and it's really like nothing I've done before. I did one at the Lincoln Center Library of Performing Arts, which was wonderful. And this show is an outgrowth of, you know, every time you develop something, it becomes something bigger and better. And this is a wonderful show. I hope everyone comes to see. I hope they come to see Eric Clapton's guitar and Les Paul and Joe Walsh's guitars, which
in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Oh, and I took them out of the case when they arrived last week. It's a moment. So, and for those people who don't know those things, they'll see them, and you'll see a photograph of those guys playing, you know, the instruments that are close to what's there. So these are their guitars, their instruments.
I don't know what made me think of this, but if this exhibit moves to Atlanta, will REM be in the show?
No, I never photographed them.
Okay, all right, just checking. Rock and Roll Icons, photographs by Patrick Harbin, is an exhibition at the Albany Institute of History and Art. It runs through February 12th. It opens November 5th, so 2 days from now. And you can find out more information by going to albanyinstitute.org. Patrick, I love when you're on the program. I thank you so much for taking the time out, and I wish you all the luck in the world with the exhibit. I can't wait to see it.
Joe, thanks so much. This has been great.
Great pleasure. Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.